All right. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this talk, Windows 8 and WinRT for the XAML developer. The goal of this talk is actually helping you transfer your knowledge that you have today in any XAML technology into Windows 8 and Windows runtime. And we'll, of course, focus on the XAML part. So my name is Gilles Kleren. I'm coming from Belgium. And I think it's my fifth time here at TechDays NL. I'll give you my Twitter and email at the end of the talk, so you can email me for questions and follow me on Twitter as well. So this talk is actually composed out of a number of concepts that you probably know from your current knowledge in XAML. So when we go through it, probably the most of the things you should know already, but I'm going to explain how they work in Windows 8 and how they will actually what you need to learn new, and if there is anything new to learn at all. So if we go through this talk, it may seem like an introduction for Silverlight, introduction to Silverlight for developers. So it's general topics, but we'll see how they apply in Windows 8. So it's really not a level 100 talk, it's level 300 talk. So you should know already quite some XAML before we start this talk. Now, in this talk, there's actually quite a lot of stuff. It's material for between 2 and 3 hours. So we can't do everything, which is why in just a second we're going to do a little vote to see what topics you're most interested in, and we'll start with those and move on accordingly to start with the most interesting topics. We will start with a general that I'm going to do to start with, and the rest of the topics we're going to go through, and then we'll see who's interested in most of them. So just to run over them so that you have an idea of what we will see. So we'll start with the general part. Then we'll, between those topics you can choose. So we'll start, we have a topic on controls, what is new in the controls area. That's actually quite a big one. We can also take a look at navigation, styling and templating, the Visual State Manager, how does that transfer to Windows 8. Data is also an important one. How does service interaction work in Windows 8? What is possible in terms of services? Do we have database access or not? Application lifecycle, as well as styles, if you know Windows Phone development, if you're coming from a Windows Phone XAML background, that these two are topics that probably will interest you, since most of these things in Windows 8 are exactly the same or rather similar at the very least. And then there's a topic on I.O. in Metro apps. So as mentioned, it's about 2-3 hours of content. Just to put the focus correct, we are focusing here on Metro-style applications built with XAML and C#. And we're not going to focus on how we did this in the desktop with WPF and Silverlight. We're focusing on the XAML part that communicates or that works together with Windows Runtime or WinRT. Okay. One other thing, that's how I actually composed this talk. So it's actually a knowledge transfer into the Windows 8 world. And so to make things a bit more interesting, you can own something. And so for every Metro topic you already know, you can earn a badge. Developers these days are crazy about badges. Foursquare has badges. Visual Studio has badges. Now you can earn a badge for every topic you already know. So at the end, you can tweet about your badges that you earned here today. You won't get them physically or something. Okay. So with that, let's do a little raise of hands for the topic. So we'll start in any case with the general stuff. And then, who wants to see something about controls? Not everything about... Okay, that's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14. Let's say 30 votes. Navigation, so that's the navigation application template and how that works in Windows 8. 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 12. Styling, templating, Visual State Manager. 2, 4, 6, 7, 8. It's more than the first one, let's say 35. Data, so service access, relational data. That's very, that's a lot more, say 45. Yeah, this is all data, so that's all data binding and stuff like that. App lifecycle, so recycling, one person. One person, okay. Nobody wants to see something about. Okay, two persons, that's it. There's one other. No, you can just raise one hand. tiles, life tiles, that stuff. 2, 4, 6, 7. Let's say 25. And then input output. It's about the same as tiles and more. Okay, so let's put them. And who hasn't raised his hand at all? Who doesn't want to see anything of this? There's one guy. Okay, you can leave now. Okay, so we're going to start with this one. So data, then control, styling. Also stylish, didn't expect that. So these two we can get throw out as well, and we'll see what we can finish off these two. Okay, so that should be about the order that we'll do. Okay? So we'll start with the general part. This is about 15 minutes or so. So the general XAML that you know today, how does that transfer to Windows 8? And you can earn a badge already, which is the general XAML for Windows 8 badge. I've done my designing for those badges. I put in an X in a circle, which was very complicated. But anyway. So in general, the XAML that you know today will transfer perfectly into Windows 8 in WinRT applications, in MetroStyle applications. That being said, things like a grid, like a stack panel, they will become even more important because MetroStyle applications, they will be run on a lot of devices. Devices including a laptop, including a high-resolution monitor from a desktop PC, and on tablet PCs, tablet devices. User is going to select a lot of devices on which Windows 8 is going to be supported, and we as a developer should adapt so that our layout is okay in all of these, on all of these devices, which probably will have a lot of different screen resolutions. Windows 8 will support it, so we as a developer need to make sure that we also adapt to that type of interface. We need to make sure that the user experience on each of those devices is as good as it can get. In terms of resolution, if you're coming from, who's coming from Silverlight? Okay, who's coming from WPF? And Windows Phone? A couple of people? Okay. So mostly Silverlight and Windows Presentation Foundation developers probably already encounter things that, like grids to make their layouts fluid so that their layouts, that their applications look good in all kinds of resolutions. Mostly Silverlight is heavily impacted by this because we don't basically know what resolution the user is going to be using. Now, in Windows 8, there are some requirements regarding resolutions that we should certainly take into account when building our applications. The minimum resolution for the operating system is 1024x768. Currently, with the current build of Windows 8, if you want to build an application with or want to run an application on a lower resolution, it basically doesn't work. If you start debugging a Visual Studio from Visual Studio at a lower resolution, it will basically fail horribly. You can't do anything. So 1024x768 is the very minimum. Don't try running it, for example, on 1280x720. That won't work either. That is the minimum resolution for the operating system. The baseline resolution is a 1366x768. Now, the difference is, in fact, that although it is supported at 1024, but everything between 1024 and 1366 is only capable of running one application at the same time. From 1366x768 onwards, you can run more than one application at the same time. We can run applications in the so-called snap state. We want to jump out of the slides very quickly and start Visual Studio and show you very briefly what this snap state looks like. I'm going to start a new project. Oh, instead of running this, I'm going to use an existing application. So let's start, for example, the RSS reader. This application is now running full screen. If I drag in my desktop is now in so-called snap state. This snapping is only supported when your applications, when your resolution is a 1366 at the very minimum. If you are on a lower resolution, it will not be able to snap an application. Now that snapping is important. I'm coming back to that in just a second. But look what happens already with this RSS application. So by default, it's a grid view. But when you put it in snap state, it's actually going to be falling back on a list view, a vertical view of less data. This application is built so that it, in both resolutions, in both states, I should actually say, is still looking good. And that's very important for us to keep in mind how to do that. Okay. Let me go back to put this one away. Back to my desktop. Okay. So on each and every resolution and in each state, we should make sure as a developer that our application looks good. How can we do that? Well, XAML is the perfect tool for that. XAML supports fluid layouts in terms of grids, in terms of stack panels. XAML can adapt itself so that the screen is always filled. We can even make applications stretch if we want to. We can make controls stretch. It's all possible with Silverlight. How can we do that? Using stretch property, using star sizing. I think most of you will know that this is not a good idea to do if you want a flexible layout. Something like this, if you want to emphasize the red part in that screen layout, let's say, that we have there at the bottom. This is not flexible, and the red part will never get the attention it needs. It will only stay 250 pixels wide. It will never get any wider. To make sure that, depending on the resolution, our screen will focus or will emphasize the red block, we can actually use star sizing. What does this basically do? It counts the amount of stars. It says, well, it's a star plus three stars plus another star is five stars. So the red block gets 60% of all available space. And that is how metro applications should really be built. This is really how we should build or we should use the screen estate in metro style applications. Even more than in Silverlight, this has become an important thing. What I just showed you, applications can be snapped while we are running them. So the snapped state, the snapped application, will always be 300 pixels wide. It cannot be any wider, it cannot be any narrower, at least in the current build, let's say. So that means, and that is also where the difference between 1024, 768, and 1366 by 768 comes from. 1024 plus 320 plus the little gutter that sits in between is equal to 1366. That's where the difference is coming from. So only from 1366 onwards, applications can be snapped. But it is our responsibility to follow or to adapt our layout so that it will, in that snapped state, also be a workable application. Think back of that RSS reader. If the application would keep the same layout, that would be annoying because the user would see perhaps one block if it's positioned okay. Otherwise, it would maybe see two half blocks. And also, in terms of scrolling patterns, that's not a good idea. Because if you have it in snapped state, there is a gutter next to it. And if you start scrolling horizontally on the grid view, you probably end up throwing the snapped state away or throwing it in full screen or in filled state again. So think of this when building applications. It's very easy to do this with XAML. Every application can be snapped. There is no way for us as a developer to say, well, my application does not benefit from snap state. It certainly should never be in snap state. We can't say that. Even if you build a game, the user can snap it. What you do with that snap state, that's your responsibility. If you say, well, it's a game, it should never be in snap state, well, I'm going to pause the game. Well, that's perfectly legit to do. But think of this as you're building a line of business application. Perhaps change your view so that your view is still usable when working in snap state. The scrolling patterns change as well. We can go to snap state by swiping. Of course, I can't swipe because I don't have a touchscreen here. If you're using the keyboard, the Win plus the dot allows applications to toggle between snap state, fill state, and full screen state. So this is actually how a layout is built up. So 1024 is the minimum to be in filled state. The gutter is, I think, 22 pixels wide, plus 320 gives you 1366. An application that comes out of the box, an application template that comes out of the box with Visual Studio is this grid application template, and it automatically already contains a grid view, which, when you put it in snap state, the code for that, we'll take a look at that in just a second, the code, the application automatically flips to a list view when you put it in Snap View. So if you want to see how it actually works, Visual Studio already provides a template that allows you to react to this different to this event that moves you to a layout changed to a different layout state, let's say. And from code you can change your view. It's basically XAML that you're going to switch, perhaps hide one view and show another view. I'm going to show you that in just a sample. We can snap to both sides. You can snap both on the left and on the right. The application can be in three states. In fact, it can be in four, but horizontally seen, so in landscape mode, it can be in three states. It can be in full screen state, it can be in snap state, or in the so-called filled state. Now, the fourth state is basically the rotation. How is the user holding the device? Is he holding it in landscape mode, or is he holding it in portrait mode? That combined with the other states gives you a total of six different states where the applications can be in. You can always you can check for how is it? Is it in landscape? Is it in portrait? Is it in fill state? Is it in snap state? And so on and so forth. The question is, of course, how should we react to rotation of the device? Rotation is, of course, important when you're using a tablet device. Rotating my laptop doesn't really do a lot. So it's probably something that you want to be detecting when the user is running it on a tablet device. So Windows 8, in general, supports being rotated. It's a gyroscope and an accelerometer within the device that notifies Windows, well, we're now in this or that state, and we're in portrait or in landscape mode. Our applications, which is important for us, should behave in both landscape and in portrait mode in the same way. It's not a good idea to say, well, in portrait mode it works like this, and in landscape mode it works like that. That's confusing for the user. You shouldn't be doing that. We as a developer, where we don't have control over the snap state, we do have control over the way our application is shown in the different orientations. It is possible to lock to a specific orientation, and it's possible to express a preference when it comes to orientation. I'm going to show you that in just a second. By the way, when you're in snap in portrait mode, no applications can snap. That's not possible in portrait mode. Okay, so there's two ways of pointing the user as a developer to how you want your application to be executed. There is a rotation preference, and that rotation preference is what you see here. In the application manifest, there is an initial rotation preference property that can be set to landscape, portrait, landscape and flipped, and portrait and flipped. This is a preference. This is how the splash screen will be shown, so that when the user sees the splash screen and it's oriented in a different direction, he'll say, this is the way that the application should be used. But after that splash screen is shown, it automatically rotates to the way the user is holding the device. So this is okay. So if, for example, if you have a reader application, like a newsreader, it's probably better to use it in landscape mode. So you should be showing your splash screen horizontally in landscape mode. But if the user is holding it in portrait mode and your application starts while it's still in portrait mode, it will be shown in portrait mode. That being said, there is another way of locking the user in a certain orientation. That can't be done via manifest configuration. That can only be done by code. That's what you see here. In the on-launched event, and if we have the time to get to the, I think it's in the application lifecycle part, there is in the on-launched, which is basically when the application is starting, there is a display properties.autorotation preferences, and you can set it to one of the four values of the display orientations enumeration. In this case, the application can only be in landscape or landscape flipped. If the user holds it in portrait, it will either stay in landscape or landscape flipped. It can't rotate in a portrait mode. Now, there's different things happening with the device. The application can resize. If you're coming from Silverlight, there is a resize event that, for example, when you have a screen-filling Silverlight application and the user starts resizing his browser, you may have to react to that resize event. That's something that happens quite often in Silverlight. That event is still usable, Although it is not really what you should be doing in Windows 8. There is a better way of doing it, because the user can't make the application smaller or bigger. The resize events will trigger if you go from snap state to flip state, but it's not very useful to know what the size is going to be. Instead, there is a layout changed event, and that notifies you about the switch between states, between full screen, flipped, and snapped states. And then there is also an orientation changed event that you should also react to if you want your application to reorder itself when you go from the landscape to portrait mode. Now, one good way of doing that is using something that you probably already know, the Visual State Manager. I think you all know the Visual State Manager. Yeah. What does it do? Well, we've talked about states in which my application can be. The Visual State Manager is doing nothing but keeping itself busy managing states. Now, what if we use that Visual State Manager now to manage the state of my entire application? We can do that. So the Visual State Manager allows us to define a state for each of those states, visual states, where the application can be in. And then using the go to state, we can actually make sure that we can move to a different state. So what we'll end up doing is defining a layout for full screen, for example, define another layout for when we're in snap state. For example, a grid view in the state where we are filling the entire screen, in a full screen. Define a list view when we are in snap state. And the Visual State Manager, using the go to state method, allows us to switch between these different states. All right, let's take a look at this. Close this down. I think I have this one already open. Yeah. So this application has a, I think it's a stack panel. And that stack panel is going to be screen filling. And when we go to the snap state, we're going to put the orientation of the stack panel from horizontal to vertical. So now you see that this is where the stack panel is located, around here. And everything is now horizontal. And this is next to this. This block is next to this. So it's an horizontal layout in my stack panel. When I move something else in, for example, let me move the desktop in, the application still puts the stack panel in horizontal orientation. When I now move my app into snap state, it doesn't seem to be okay. Okay, 1 second.
And there's this one state in here.
Sorry for that. There is something wrong here. But it should work now. Yeah, I have a bit of a cold, so the weather has finally gotten to me, so oops, that was a bit too fast. So let's put it in snap state. There we go. It was actually throw an exception before it could go to the snap state. So what you see now is that while it's in snap state, it is actually switching the orientation of the stack panel to vertical. And I'm doing this simply by using the Visual State Manager. If Visual Studio wants to move on, which it doesn't seem to be doing. I think you've heard the story quite a few times already that this is, let's say, the alpha. Okay. There we go. So, let's take a look how this was done. It's really not responding very well, but anyway. So we have the Visual State Manager defined on the root grid of the application. And I'm defining several states. I have the full state, the visual state. I have the fill state. And inside of that fill state, you see that the orientation of the input panel, which is the main block, is set to horizontal. This is general. This is typical Visual State Manager code. When we move to the snap state, we'll see that the input panel has its orientation set to vertical. So we have defined how my layout should change when we go from one state to the other.
Now let's take a look at the code. We register for a layout changed. I probably typed something wrong here. There we go. Here we go. So we register here for the layout changed event, which will automatically trigger when we switch from one state to the other. And we're going to handle that ourselves in the onLayoutChanged event. In there, we get in what is the current state that we want to go to. So we, for example, get in that we want to go to the snap state. So then we ask the Visual State Manager, now go to the snap state. Automatically, the XAML will reorganize the input panel so that the orientation of the stack panel is going to be horizontal or vertical accordingly. Okay? So you really can leverage what you already know in this part. It's just plain Visual State Manager code. There's really nothing new going on. And of course, you fall back on your knowledge of XAML as well to make sure that you can build a fluent layout. So I think the general stuff, you earn a badge for that, right? That's nothing new. Okay. What did you want to see next? Data. Let me scroll down a bit. Scroll down, navigation. I think I'm too far now. This is data. Okay. Data. And you can earn another badge, the Data Master badge. Okay. Let's take a look. Our Windows 8 applications, they should be alive with content. They should be connected at any point in time. A stock ticker without stock information is like a bar without beer. That's coming from a guy who doesn't drink beer, but anyway. I'm Belgian and I don't drink beer. Yeah, I don't eat chocolate either, so I'm the atypical Belgian. Okay, so applications should get in that data. How can they do that? Well, it is a three-step process, basically. First, they need to get the data. It works asynchronously, just like in Silverlight or Windows Phone. And then they can use the data. They can parse the data, and then they can bind the data. These are the steps to build data or to use data in Windows 8 applications. Now, getting data. Currently, there is no way of using a relational data source in Windows 8 applications. So there is no SQL CE support, for example, like you have in Windows Phone Mango. That's not supported. There is no link to SQL. There is no data sets. Woo. Which is a good thing. Yeah. So any ADO.NET code is missing at this point from WinRT. There's nothing in there. So that means that for your data, where do you need to go? A service, right? Even if at some point there should be data, relational data support on the client using some database implementation, you still should be going to a service to get up-to-date data. That's quite logical. You're actually working with an application that needs up-to-date data, so it's not going to be able to use it locally. So if there is at some point database support, well, then you can use it perhaps to store settings or to store data. But at any given point in time, when you need up-to-date data, you need to go to a service. That is quite normal. So working with a service is preferred in most cases in Windows 8 applications. That has not changed from Silverlight. That has not changed from Windows Phone. So any relational database that you use should only be accessible via some service. There is no way that a Windows 8 Metro-style application will get the option to have a connection string, and it will go out to some database that is not going to be supported. Security-wise, that would be a horror story, so never going to happen. Now, that being said, local data is important as well. Applications in Windows 8 are different than what we have in the Windows environment. The users no longer think of the fact that they have to save. They don't always think of that in Windows, in regular Windows either, but in Windows 8 it's going to be a different story. Because users are more used to today to closing down an app by clicking on a button and boom, the application is gone, and when they come back, they want to continue where they left off. Without us as developers saying, "Ho, dear user, wait, Do you want to save this? Do you really want to quit the application? No, that's not possible anymore. There is no closing closing button in the application. They just hit the Windows button and boom, the application is gone. They have to use the other thing, the iPad. Right? They're used to that. So they want to have that same experience in a Windows 8 tablet as well. So for us as a developer, that is going to be an important thing. We should make sure that applications store state whenever the user is making any movement to leaving the application, so that when the user comes back to the application, it should actually pick up where it left off. We'll take a look at that if we have time when we're looking at I/O and also at the application lifecycle. So applications, apart from not having access to a local relational database, should be storing their own data, their own state, and perhaps also something on the local file system. We'll take a look at that later on. So back to services. What can they do with services? Well, they can access XML over HTTP, which is REST-based, XML or JSON over HTTP. They can access ASMX web services. They can access WCF services. I should actually mention WCF also, but they use the basic HTTP binding, so basically they fall back on the way that an ASMX web service works. At this point, there's also support for sockets, the support for OData. There's no real support for RIA services, so that's a bit of a bummer, in fact. Maybe that will come in the future. I certainly hope so. There is support for RIA services using or exposing RIA services pure XML data, but it's not really supported, not integrated in Visual Studio at this point. So let's hope that that comes at some point. Now, one thing that is new is that the asynchronous way of working from Silverlight or for Windows Home gets easier. It's still the same thing. You access a service. You wait for the response to come back. You don't do that in the UI thread. You don't block the UI thread because then the application is going to wait, and the user is actually going to have to wait until the service comes back with the response, which is not what you want. So in Silverlight, you solve that by doing an asynchronous call and then wait for the response to come back, basically on a different thread. That didn't block the UI thread, which was good, because otherwise the user's browser would have been blocked the entire time. Now, in Windows 8, things are a bit easier by using the await keyword. Maybe you've already seen some of the sessions around await. Basically, simply using await from Windows 8 is very simple. You simply define your asynchronous call. You put await in front of it, which actually will result in all the lines in that same method below that await line to wait executing until the asynchronous call is coming back. Marking or using await in a method requires you to put async on top of it or in the method declaration. It is also executing in the UI thread, which makes sure that you don't have to do a dispatcher begin invoke to marshal back to the UI thread. That's not necessary either. Okay. Let's take a look at getting data in a Windows application. Let's open the data block. Let's use this one. So I'm going to use an application that communicates with Flickr. And let's see how it works. And then we'll take a look at the code and we'll see what is different from Silverlight. Okay, so what do we have to search for? Any suggestions? What are we in here? Den Haag? Let's try. Let me see what you guys are up to. You are painting, it seems. Let's try to take this. Yeah. Maybe we get some interesting results that we should not know. Who knows? Okay, so there we have some results coming in. And we get some beer, of course, which is normal. Okay. So You see that this is now actually loading data from Flickr. It has sent out a request to a URL, and it has captured the response, which is pure XML in this case. You can use JSON as well, but this is pure XML. And I'm going to parse that XML and then fill up a grid view with some images that I download on basically one by one. Because if you scroll very fast, you see that it has not loaded those images. The grid view, which we're using here, sorry for that, is actually is using virtualization. It is only loading in the images that it's that it's needing at this point. Okay, let's take a look at how this was done. To make it a bit easier, I placed in comment the code that you would write in Silverlight, and you'll see it's actually quite similar. So in Silverlight, we would use a web client, or we could use the HTTP web request, as you probably all know. We do the asynchronous call, and then we define the callback in this completed, which would then be this one. Scroll up, and in there you would have the e.result, which contains a string containing the XML, and then you would parse that using link to XML, probably. Okay. Now, how did we do this in Windows 8? We call this create client. The web client does not exist in Silverlight, in Windows 8. So instead, we have to use the HTTP client class, as you can see over here. So I'm doing more or less the same thing. I define an address to where we need to go. I instantiate the HTTP client and define an address. And then the rest of the code that we need to look at is up here. And it gets interesting. We ask the HTTP client to asynchronously get that data, send the request to a URL, and get in the response. That's what we're doing there with the HTTP client.getAsync. We pass in the search URL, and we also pass in an API key, which is relevant for Flickr. And then notice the await. We don't define a callback here. It's automatically waiting here on this particular line until the result is coming back from Flickr. So if this call takes 10 seconds, the next line here, this one is only going to happen after 10 seconds. But internally, the compiler makes sure that this code gets handled asynchronously. It's much cleaner. It doesn't require you to go from jump one to jump two in a callback, and then if you do sequences of calls, then you have a whole list of sequentially executed calls. That's not necessary here anymore. I simply use the await. Because I'm using await, I need to mark this with async as well here, over here. I then get in the response, which is not a string. It's an HTTP response message. And in this parse Flickr response, I'm going to ask that HTTP response to read out its content, read as a string, and that is giving me that XML that I need to parse. And from then on, it is the same code as in Silverlight. In this case, I am using a list. I can use the list. That's part of the Windows 8 tailored profile. I can use link to XML in this case. Link to XML is not part of Windows runtime. It is part of the tailored profile for Windows 8, which is a subset of .NET that is being made available for Windows 8 applications. It includes things like link, like threading, quite a few other things, although it's a small tailored profile. So that's why I get support for link, because Windows runtime, WinRT, does not support link. And then I'm doing a simple link to XML query. I instantiate a new Flickr image info class, which is a class that I created myself. Then I create some bitmap images. This is exactly the same as if you do it in Silverlight. And then I specify the item source to that enumerable in images or something. And then I bind that to a grid view. Is that much different? It's a bit different. It's actually a bit easier because I don't have to write the callbacks and stuff. I've seen developers open up their eyes the first time they see that they have to do callback event handlers. It's something that when you explain it to people sometimes can be a bit harder. I think this is much easier. So what have we now done? We've gotten in the data, and I've already gone a bit further than what we were than where we were in the slides. So we can parse the data. Perfectly possible. You can do that using link to XML. There's other options available as well, but link to XML is probably going to be your best choice. Once you have that data in a list or in specific objects, you can then use data binding. Data binding is supported in more or less the same way as it is in Silverlight, and we'll see that in just a second. Not everything that you have supported in Silverlight today is supported in Windows 8. What is supported? So regular data binding, binding to an object, things like a data context. Converters are supported, the mode one-way, two-way, one-time bindings, one-way, one-time mode is supported. All those things remain exactly the same. However, as mentioned, not everything is supported in data binding, what we have in Silverlight, and certainly not what we have in WPF. To really say this and that is supported, it's quite difficult. Let's say that the current state is somewhere Silverlight 2, 3, more or less. Not everything that is supported in Silverlight 4 and in Silverlight 5 in terms of data binding is supported in Windows 8 at this point. So let's hope that there are some new features coming in that area as well. Things like a data template that is also supported remains exactly the same thing. There's nothing new in that area coming in Windows 8. Okay. Let's take a look to the next demo. And I'm going to use the Express Edition because it's normally a bit faster than the full version. Let me open the sample for you. So we'll use the data binding one. You may have seen that there was also a demo about WCF in there. So WCF is fully supported. You can add service references. That's not an issue. However, running on the local host and accessing that from Windows 8 requires quite a few annoying things that I hope will also be fixed with the next release. Among others, you have to disable your firewall, which is not a big deal, but you also have to run a few command line things to actually update the registry so that the Windows 8 can access the local host, which is by default blocked. Okay, so let's run this thing and let's take a look at some data binding. So the most basic things like one-way binding, two-way binding, that is supported. So you see here that, let me zoom in on it a little bit. Let's try zooming in, there we go. So this is a two-way binding. As you can see, I update, this is a one-way binding, sorry. When I change this, it doesn't update the other data source. This is a two-way binding. I can change this one, and it will automatically update as well. That's typical stuff that you already know. Also, the syntax for this has not changed at all. So let's scroll to this one. There we go. So we have that text block here. Not this one, sorry. The text box here, of which the text is bound to an element. It's an element-to-element binding. And in this case, it is the slider. You bind to the value, what is value, and then we set the mode is one way. One way, two way, all those things remain exactly the same. A value converter still exists. It's still a class that implements the iValue converter. So if we go, for example, use this thing, let me zoom in on it a bit, it's converting the value into a letter grade, as you can see here. This is done entirely using a value converter. That is down at the bottom, I think, this one. There we go. So it's a class that implements the iValue converter that has a convert and a convert back method. The convert will actually be called when we go from source to target. Nothing new here, I think. Binding to a model, so binding to an object, is still the same. The concept of a data context still exists. You have a data context, and your child controls can bind to properties of that data context. So in here, we have a data context set on this container, and it's actually binding to two properties. This also works in a two-way mode. Let's see. So we have the data context, this one here. So this is, I think, a stack panel or a grid, a stack panel. We set a stack panel of the stack panel's data context to some employee object, and that still works in the exact same way. I notify property changed. That object changes, no problem. Automatically, the change will be pushed back forward and backward into the model object. So that remains the same as well. I'm not going to spend time on indexers. That remains the same as well. Data templates. You see that there at the bottom, we have some different data templates applied on the items within this list box, I think. So let's take a look at that one. If data template syntax is still the same. Scenario number five. So we have a list box over here, and we declare an item template for that. And that item template is a data template in which we can do bindings to specific items. Nothing changed there either. And collection changes, maybe to mention, the iNotify collection changed interface is supported, but there is a bug in there, which means that it doesn't really work yet. So you have to do a lot of manual work. I assume that will be fixed in the next version so that it also works in the same way as in Silverlight and Windows Phone. So the observable collection doesn't really work well yet, so you have to do more work yourself. Take a look at the demos. You can download them from my blog if you want more information on this. So I assume that, again, this is, woohoo, another batch, So this remains the same. Data binding remains the same. Accessing a service remains the same thing. It becomes an HTTP client instead of a web client. So I think this is something that, again, you can put on your resume that you already know. Okay. The next one that you want to see is styling and templating. Well, that's quite a short one. Let me see where it is. It's always difficult to find something in PowerPoint. This is control. Maybe I should go to the index. That might be easier for me to find it. Behind navigation. Okay.
You use a search term for that, right?
I don't think PowerPoint supports that yet. There we are. No. Here it is. Okay. So if you want to be a stylish developer, we can do that. So you can win the stylish Windows 8 developer badge. Question is if you really want to be that. Anyway. Okay. So, one thing that changed is, of course, the way that controls are styled by default. Control is not, doesn't have the regular button template anymore. It's a different template. Windows 8 brings its own style, its own templates to the platform, which is good. It's the Metro style. If you've done some Windows Phone 7, well, that Metro style is almost the same as the one for Windows 8. So there's really nothing different going on. It is, in fact, just a different template that on the control templates that are being applied on the controls. That's about it. It's a default style that comes along with the controls. Now, when you start building any application, you can benefit from that immediately because the controls, just like they have in Silverlight and like they have in Windows Phone, have one generic.xaml built into the platform. That generic.xaml contains, well, the default styles for the dark interface. Coming back to that in just a second. So the default styles, they are included. If you open that generic XAML, and we'll do that in just a second, you'll see that a style is simply still a style. It contains resource dictionaries. It contains everything that you probably already worked with in Windows Phone or Silverlight or Windows Presentation Foundation. Now, there is something called the dark and the light theme in Windows 8. The dark theme is the default. The dark theme is basically, with everything being black, the controls having some white contours, like a white border around the button, white text on the button. So that is what you get by default. The dark style is the default for each template that you have today in Visual Studio. So those things are included by default, baked into the controls in the file called generic.xaml. Now, if you build custom controls in Silverlight, you have to use that file, generic.xaml, as well. When should you use that dark style? when you want to build an application which requires high contrast, that does things with video, that does things with photos, then dark is a better choice because it creates better contrast between your application and the background, the application content and the background. Then you have the light style. And the light style, there is a file that you can download coming with the SDK, and it's used in most SDK samples, which is called the lightgeneric.xaml. And it contains, let's say, the inverse. Everything what was black is now white and vice versa. And that file is, that style is, I think, more suited for building applications that use the, that are business applications, where you have more text to read. It's easier to read stuff with that white template. Let's take a look at it. So let's take a look at styling that light and dark theme. Open up the solution. There we go. Let's run it. So the entire application, by the way, is using that light theme. The block of content here in the output section is now also using that light theme. When I click on this one, it's switching to the dark theme. It's actually hiding another stack panel showing this one. So this is the default. If you build any application without changing anything to the styles, that is what you get out of the box with Windows 8 application templates. You have, for example, the button, which has a white border and some text on it, and some rollover effects. That is included. You have the toggle switch control, which has the blue background. That is included by default. The white, the light theme, is more or less the same thing, that it has some different contrast modes. You get these for free from Microsoft. There's two files in there. Yes? No, that doesn't exist. No. In fact, yeah, it exists for some controls. I should say, yeah, it exists. But there are named brushes that you can override. Like the blue thing, that's the brush, the blue for the toggle switch. Yeah, yeah. But it's not like that the system has, in the developer preview, there is no accent color that the user, the theme color, no, that doesn't exist at this point, no. So there's two files included in this sample, which is the generic sample, XAML, and the lightgeneric.xaml. These are quite huge files. I think there are a couple of thousands of lines of code. So these are the default styles. For example, the hyperlink button. You can change that if you're feeling adventurous. The good eye has maybe noticed some error in here. So these are the dark styles, and then in the light generic, this is the exact same thing, but then for the light styles. As you can see, it's just the same thing. We have font families declared. We have, this is quite large for Visual Studio. We have solid color brushes that we are defining, and then we have styles with setters, values, and properties being set. Yeah? There's nothing different going on here. Okay. Now, what do we actually use to build custom style applications? Well, there's several things. We can use properties, but we shouldn't be doing that. We should use styles for that. No inline styling, but use a style XAML file, a resource dictionary for that. If you want to build custom controls, we're going to fall back on templates. Templates is still the same thing. You can go to MSDN for a template of a control, and then download the MSDN the template from there for the control. That's still possible. It's a less better approach than using the Visual State Manager. And there we have the Visual State Manager again. In the beginning, we used it to switch states for the application. We can also use it for building custom controls. Everyone knows the Visual State Manager, how it works? Concept of states. Yeah. It has states that we override, basically. That's still the same. So styling, exactly the same thing. What is supported at this point? An implicit style, an explicit style, and a based on style. An explicit style is a style that has a target type defined as well as a key, so that when we want to use it, we have to explicitly say style equals this particular style. An implicit style is a style that has no key defined, but only a target type defined. It will be used for every instance of, of that target type throughout my application, unless some explicit style has been used on some instance of a control. So that is overriding the default style. And then based on styles can be used as well in Silverlight. In Windows 8. I'm still always saying Silverlight. Sorry. So based on styles is also supported. You can define a base style, for example, one that contains the font family, and then have several styles inherit from that style using the based on keyword. Templating. How can you override the way a control looks? There's two ways of doing that. Effect tree, changing properties, but that's not going to get you very far. You can use a custom control, and you can use the Visual State Manager. This is, in fact, I think it's a button that has been overridden. There is a new template for that control being defined. Using a template is okay, but it is a lot of work if you want to get it right. The Visual State Manager is easier. You simply define, well, if my button is in the regular state, it should be that. It should look like that. If I'm hovering over it, it should have a black background. If I'm clicking on it, it should be red, for example. That is what the Visual State Manager can help you to do. It allows you to override how the control should look in the different states, allowing you to completely redesign your control, including all the states or the interactions that can happen with the control. Let's take a look at this. Why did I close Visual Studio once again? Let's open style. I think it's in this one. Yeah. Is it hot in here? Yeah. Those lamps are killing me. Okay. So what we can do with a control, for example, with a button, there you have your default button with the light generic style being applied on it. We don't like that. Okay, so we can change it using some properties. One can argue that this looks better, but anyway. So this is simply changing some properties on that control. How do we do that? Let us take a look at the scenario number 5. Why is SAML so large? Okay. So what did we do here? We defined on that button a new style called the refresh button style, which is a regular style which has some setters, properties, and values. Let's take a look for it. There we go. So there we have a style. I think I did something wrong. My mistake. And this one is the one that we needed to look at. Sorry for that. This one is the style that we're using. So this is the custom button style. And that custom button style has just some setters and containing a property and a value. So there is nothing overriding the template here. It's still a rectangle button. Nothing special. Then we have a template. How do you build a custom template? Well, you also include a style, but you override the control template property with a new control template. You override the template property with a new control template. Where do you get those templates? Well, the good thing is you can go to MSDN, search for the Silverlight templates, you can copy those, and you can still work with those. It's the same code. It works. The bad thing about using this approach, well, it's difficult to build in all the interactions that we can do with the control. Like, for example, clicking on something, hovering. You don't see that this is a button. And no one knows that this is a button. Let's go back to the scenario number 5 now. So that is that refresh button style. That refresh button style is a button that has for its control template a new template. For its template a new control template. That is the stack panel in this case, which has an ellipse and a text block in there. But there is no way that Windows 8 is going to figure out what it should do when we're hovering over that control. It doesn't know. Why? We don't specify it. And our final solution for that is using the Visual State Manager, which allows me to style the button, same look and feel here, but when I hover over it, it becomes a bit gray, and when I click on it, it becomes inverted in color. that is the easy way of doing things with the Visual State Manager. So let's go back down. We have now used this VSM refresh button style, which is this one. And here we define a new control template, defining some visual state groups, and exactly the same as we would do it in Silverlight. You can even do your design of this button control template in Blend. It will still work. Maybe someone has noticed something different here. It doesn't say VSM colon Visual State Manager. Why is that? Because basically XAML is native, and therefore you don't have to import that namespace anymore. It's native. Everything is known here. So the VSM colon is gone. It is now native for WinRT. All right. Let's kill that one. And let's take a look what we define, what we want. Woo-hoo. You're now all stylish Windows 8 developers. You can go to your wife tonight and say, I'm now a stylish Windows 8 developer.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
Triggers.
At this point, triggers are not in, behaviors are not in there, so those things are not supported yet. We'll do questions at the end so we can cover as much content. Okay, is that fine? Let's take a look at controls. I think that's going to be the last one that we can see. But I have a surprise for you. But let's take a look. Controls. That's this one. Okay. So, controls. What is new? What is still working? Most controls still work. Not every control has made the cut, but most controls are in there. They have mostly the same properties. Some properties are not supported. May come. I don't know by heart which are, but it's a very small number of things that are not supported. So things like animations, Visual State Manager, the parts and states model, that is still available as well. There are new controls as well, and we'll take a look at those in more detail in just a second. One thing that has changed is the way that we can capture how the user is interacting with the control. What I mean by that is, for example, you have a button, and on the button you can click. On Windows Phone, you have also the tap event. In Windows 8, you basically don't know how your Metro-style application is going to be controlled. Is it going to be the mouse? Is it going to be touch input? You don't know. That's why Microsoft decided to abstract those things away and move in a new API, the pointer API, which allows you to say, well, capture whatever input we have and direct it to either touch or mouse input. So pointer release, pointer enter will go to, will come from the mouse, will be triggered by the mouse, or will be triggered by touch input whenever you're doing something with your fingers. Yeah? So it's basically a new API pointer events. And all controls, of course, are now styled with the Windows 8 default style. So most controls made the cut to Windows 8, as you can see here. We have the button, we have the checkbox, all those things stayed the same. Notice that the web browser control has now become the web view control. Some new ones that we'll take a look at in just a second are the list view, the grid view, the flip view. And some controls, as you can see there at the top right, have also been extended with some new options. Like, for example, the text box has some automatic spellings check in Windows 8. So let me briefly give you an overview of these controls. I don't know by heart, actually, which one didn't make it. I think the tree view didn't make it at this point. Silverlight. It's mostly a one-on-one copy of Silverlight. It's not WPF directly in terms of controls. So the question was, which controls didn't make it? I know the tree view is not in there, but the specific specific WPF controls, they're not in here either. No. Things like the flow document and stuff from WPF, that's not in here either at this point. Okay, let's run this, or try running it. There we go, come on.
So, a button. That is still a button. You have the toggle switch. Toggle switch is coming from Windows Phone. A checkbox control, a hyperlink button, a radio button. Those are still in here. Then we have, these are new, in fact, the progress ring. The progress bar, that's falling off the screen, is also coming from Windows Phone. That's more or less the same. The is indeterminate feature is still there, because we don't bother to ask to say to the user how long it's going to take, so that's important. Some miscellaneous ones, combo box control. It has some new behaviors. You can see it slides open. That's basically in the template, but it works in the exact same way as we're used to working with it. The slider control, the properties, as mentioned, are also still the same. So an image can do a fill. It can do stretching to none. It can do a uniform fill, and it can do a uniform to fill stretch. There we go. There's also the tooltip, as you can see here, that the tooltip is appearing, and also the pop-up control. Those are still in here. So as you can see, it's more or less the Windows Phone / Silverlight controls that are inside of Windows 8 MetroStar applications. This one we can shut down. Some are new. The media player is a new control. So we did have the media element, although the media element had one big disappointment, which was the fact that, well, you had to write your controls yourself. Now there is the media player control, which has these controls that you see here at the bottom automatically out of the box. The toggle switch I already showed you, and the progress ring I already showed you as well. Another one that is new is the application bar. It's not that new if you're coming from Windows Phone, because it's basically the same thing. The application bar is an important control for Windows 8 MetroStar applications. In the Metro, everything is around the content, not the Chrome. So developers should not be cluttering their UIs with main menus and toolbars and this and that. Everything should be content, so that the user has as much content on his screen as possibly as he possibly can. Of course, at some point, you will need some commands to allow the user to do stuff with your application. Navigate backwards, for example. Edit something. For that, the application bar is an absolutely perfect solution. The application bar you see at the bottom is that black bar that you have. You can place it wherever you want. You can also put it at the top. However, think when building an application how the user will interact with your application. He will probably hold the device in landscape, because that is more or less what we're going to with Windows 8. And the most common controls should be at the very far left and far right, basically, so that he doesn't have to let go of one hand of the device, and he can do your most common commands with his thumbs. That's why it should be at the bottom. Also, don't put things at the top if they can be at the bottom. So the application bar can be made persistent, although that is not perhaps a good solution. In most cases, it might be better to do a light dismiss or a time dismiss. Time dismiss basically goes away after a specified amount of time. You can set it yourself, 5 seconds, for example. Or you can also do a light dismiss, which basically will hide the application bar once you do something else with your application. Okay. Let me show you those very quickly. The media player control, let's take a look at that one. So it's a one-on-one direct copy from a media element. Just replace media element by media player, and it will work. I'm going to select the media file here. There we go. It's a WMV file. And it's going to start playing a video. It's from an event that we did in Belgium. So, okay. And the answer was yes, by the way. Okay, so how is this structured? Well, this is done through a media player control, as you can see there at the bottom. I placed the media element next to it so that you can see that it's a one-on-one copy. There is nothing really different going on. The media player has all these play controls, pause controls, volume controls out of the box available. I assume, but I haven't tried that, that you can also restyle that. But yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of manual work at this point. Let's go back to slides. We can shut this one down as well because it keeps on waiting here. I did forget the application bar. Sorry for that. Let me show you that very quickly as well. So let's say open the application bar. That's the one I wanted. So the application bar in this sample, there's two application bars. There's one at the top and one at the bottom. When do the application bars appear? In touch-based device, when you swipe in from the top, the application bar is going to appear. I forgot to place it. You can place it wherever you want, that you can see here. You can place it wherever you want. In this case, it's not at the correct place. I'm sorry for that. You can place it wherever you want. You see that as well. So the one at the bottom is placed where it should be placed. And in this case, it is actually made persistent, so it's always there. You can switch that off. I'll probably have to. Don't know if I can. Yeah, okay. So I selected light dismiss. Light dismiss is going to go away when I do something else with my application. When I click on something, it's going to go away. Time dismiss, well, that is going to hide itself after a couple of seconds. And notice that what I just explained, the most common commands should be placed at the very far left and far right so that the user doesn't have to let go of the device or put it down on the table to do something with your application. You can just interact with your application by just holding it. We'll do it at the end, okay? And so the application bar is a simple control. It's the same control as we have in Windows Phone 7. I think it's down here somewhere. Yeah. This is one annoying thing with the current build. When you scroll too fast in Visual Studio, it simply hangs for a couple of seconds. So there's very little you can do on it. It depends on the day, and today is a bad day for the machine. I don't know. So there we have the application bar, which I aligned at the very bottom of my screen, and I placed in it a grid. It's a content control, and in there I placed some buttons, as you can see over here. Right? Of course, these buttons should be styled so that they are in accordance with Metro guidelines. And we have 5 more minutes, and we'll fill them up by taking a look at some information about collections. So collections are very popular in all kinds of data. So, for example, Flickr is a collection of data, a collection of photos. Your file system as well. Your tweets, your news, and also alarms in Windows 8, and also, of course, the start screen in Windows 8. All these things are collections. And that's why Microsoft decided that they would include a lot of new NIST controls, quite a few interesting new controls, in addition to the old ones which are still there. Like the list box is still there, but the list box doesn't give you an optimal touch experience, touch interaction with Windows 8. That's why they included some new ones in Windows 8. And these are the list view, the grid view, the jump viewer, and the flip view. The good news is that if you have a list box today, replace box by view, and your list view will work. Even the same item templates that you created for Silverlight, it will just be a copy one-to-one because it will still work. This is that list view. So it's, as you can see, it's optimized for Windows 8. It is in accordance with Metro. It has virtualization. The list box in Silverlight has virtualization as well. So this one has virtualization out of the box available as well. So that makes sure that when you start scrolling, it doesn't load by default all the items. It only loads the ones that are relevant, plus some more to catch slow-moving touches. It's very touch-friendly. When you scroll, it goes very fast. It's a control built for touch. You can interact with it. You can select items, but I'm going to show you that in a sample. So let's go to controls. Let's take the list view. So this is, again, that Flickr application.
but now in combination with a list view. And while we're waiting, I'm going to open the next one as well. So, let's run this one already. So, let's search for the Netherlands. I want to see what that gives. Holland. Cheese? No cheese. No cheese. So this is that list view. If you would do it with the list box, it's going to look ugly because it's not styled for Metro, that list box. This list view automatically blends into the Metro style. If I would do a touch, it would really move very smoothly. When I do it with the mouse, you see that it's also moving very slowly, very smoothly on my device. Let's go and take a look at the other sample, this one. I'm going to start it already because I need it for the next demo as well. I'm going to come here already. So, doesn't seem to be doing that. So this is a list view as well, as you can see here. Here I can scroll through the items in this exact same way. Let me go to my slides again because we're almost out of time. The grid view, you already saw the grid view with the Flickr sample. It allows you to do a grid-based layout of your controls. You can swipe through the items by moving your fingers left and right, which is also a very good experience. It is, in fact, is more or less the same experience as what Windows 8 start screens, as the start screen gives you. It also supports grouping, which is a very big deal in this case. The Windows 8 start screen allows you to create groups, and that the grid view also allows you to do. Based on some grouping mechanism that you built yourself, you can group your items in groups so that the groups will be displayed by the grid view. And I'm going to finish off by showing you that in the last demo that we'll see here. And I need to go to another demo because that's not this one. The grouping grid view demo. To support this, there is a new interface called the iGroup Info. And basically what you will have to do is you will order your items in a list of lists, a list of iGroup infos. Let me show you that. So here we have, as you can see, a group and the items of that group. Another group and the items of that group through which we can scroll. So how did we do that? Well, there is a grid view, for that. Let me go down to, I think it's this one. Come on, it's stopping again. So what you have here is the grid view. Okay, there we go. So we have the grid view, and we have an items panel defined, which is in this case a regular stack panel. So that is the regular control. Then we need to define how an individual item is going to be represented. And that is going to be using an image and a text block. That is the regular item panel. And finally, we also need to define how each group is going to be represented. And for a group, we have a header, the name of the group, as well as a panel. And that's what you see here in this styling. So it's a new way of working with a group control, or grid control in this case. It requires you to write some grouping mechanism, some group styling. And that's what you have here. So the header is going to be a text block, and the panel is going to be a new wrapping grid called the variable sized wrap grid. Basically, that grid allows you to write, it can contain items of different sizes. If you saw the slides, you saw that some items are bigger than other ones. Notice here that we're binding the header to name. That's always the case, because we're actually binding the header to an item of that iGroup info. Let me show you the code for this. In the XAML, I'm going to take this one, Control-Tab, F8.
V. There we go. I need the collection view source, I think. There we go. No, not this one. Come on. This one is the one I need. Okay. So look what we're binding to here. We're binding to a list of group info lists. And that group info list is a custom class that implements the iGroup info interface. The iGroup info interface. That iGroup info interface has a key. So basically, it has a key and a collection of items that we're going to bind to. So we're basically binding to a list of lists for that grid view. A list of groups. So what I'm doing is, I have a list of data, and I'm using a link query on that, you see here, in which I'm going to group my items. And for each group that I find in my query, I'm going to create a new group info list, which is that class that implements that interface. And I'm going to add that to a list of iGroup infos, which is my groups collection here. And then, to finish off, I'm going to simply set the collection view source, its source, to that list of iGroup infos. And automatically, through setting my styling correct in my XAML, it will pick up on this data. Okay. So I think we're already 5 minutes over time, so I'm going to finish off. So the surprise I can give you, the gift I can give you, is apart from the fact that you can easily say that you are a Windows 8 Metro application developer, is that all the rest of the content you can download for free. I have created this as a webinar as well, so you can download it, and you can read, and you can view it at your own pace. I put those links on my blog as well. So I think it's a very good resource to learn some more about Windows 8. So take a look at it. So it's two bit.ly links, Win8 XAML Part 1 and Win8 XAML Part 2. And there I even go deeper in the topics that we've done here. It's about 2.5 to 3 hours of content that you can take a look at your own pace. Okay? So if you have any questions, feel free to come up to me. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you will go home with your new badges and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.